Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... This is a podcast for Lynette and Vishnu, people I'm working with a little bit on some projects coming up, and I'll just give you a bit of a context to it. So I do podcasts and put it into a piece of podcast software which takes care of it and publishes it. So I produce sometimes up to 3 podcasts a day, sometimes less, depending on the pressure and things coming up, whether I have to work on projects or just simply don't have time to do it. One of the things I have to do is sort of compress basic rehab together. So I compress cardiac workouts with podcasting. Pretty amazing stuff. One is that the cardiac workouts are pretty boring, and two is that part of the cognitive stuff is you have to add do things at once, sort of like do exercise and balance, or walk and talk, or do multiple things at the same time to get benefit, or at least that's the theory at least. The little few, about 80 listeners overseas will listen in as I talk about various topics, remember things or try and go. One of the major things I have to do is read something and recall and talk about it. And I've been doing this, 1,400 podcasts, where the first one to go right back, I'm barely able to breathe. And this is a podcast over a year. Now, what I'm doing now, Lynette will appreciate this, is that I'm going for a walk from my house, possibly down to the Glenbrook lookout. And it's, there's multiple Glenbrook lookout, the Glenbrook Gorge going down. I might need to go all the way down because I'm pretty tired overall. Okay, so Lynette particularly knows that the sort of low pressure, just come up with the ideas and work on them, is sort of an ideal match for what I'm trying to do. And again, coming up with ideas and working on it means I have to do some projects, I have to write emails, write things up, build in some circumstances circuits, put things together, and sort of think socially about getting things done, and also recall how things have gone in the past. And so for Lynette, we're talking about the physics lab on a skateboard. Now, what the reality here is that there are so many projects that I can easily talk about one, and if someone grabs it and goes ahead with it overseas for some reason, good luck to them. And perhaps I can acknowledge it, and perhaps we can sort of add the podcast plus the success story of someone else overseas doing it. But in reality, the actual technical aspects of actually getting the right people together and the right sequences together and to actually make it successful. You can try it, an idea, okay, but to actually make it a successful broad idea is there. So the overall context is that part of the other advice is ideally the employer has an obligation to provide rehabilitative work environments. A path back to work, that's not happening. And so there's the advice to volunteer for various organisations, which I indeed have. And in the process, I've gone to Science Teachers Association of New South Wales. I'm not saying who's involved in it. I'm not going to mention names. And there's a... I sat in on the first planning meeting and I struggled a bit to understand various things, and I got various starting point scenarios, and obviously my overall projects that I'm working on, and to try and mix them together, or skills and stuff like that. So just talking again on rehab, to get integrated rehab, which doesn't sort of stop when I run into a brick wall, or it works together. I've got it's going to be four layers of rehab that I'm working on, but I think it's more clearly three. And the first one is projects, and this is a sequence of projects. They've got a sort of a strategic aim, so where I build things, attempt something, and I'm working on the projects. And there's multiple projects, so if one blocks, I can move on to the next one, or move between the different projects, and they take a certain amount of time. But because I'm prepared to wait, I can get very low shipping costs, and actually approach projects in a very rigorous way, going through concept prototypes, research projects to production prototypes as I go through the projects. And because the projects demand skill level and asks questions which are not available in the immediate environment. So as I'm building up electronics, I realize that my skill level isn't up to scratch, or I don't have the right equipment, or that a particular method no longer makes sense because the parts aren't made. Obviously the parts aren't made. We're doing it in a much more intelligent way, and just picking through all the different ways of doing different projects. So the project as sort of a driver, a rehabilitation driver in terms of organization. And it also sort of means that I've got all my tools out there, and I have to actually put it down and recognize them, pick them up and put circuits together and memorize it there. So there's projects, there's communication. Now communication is being able to get the idea across without losing the audience. So Lynette here, that's the train going past Lombok Station that you can hear there. So communication, and this is sort of a multiple layers. I have to actually understand my audience. So the easiest way to do that is cut your audience right down, and then your message. And of course, you're thinking on so many different levels, it's hard to actually communicate clearly and concisely. Now, in all these, in projects and communication, I fail, definitely. And and this is sort of your research thing. Research is productive failure. So basically, communications don't go well. I do make mistakes, doesn't go. There's the last section. So it's projects, communication, skills. And so it'll be fundamental skills like soldering skills, or internet skills, writing web pages, a game, and sort of just the skill of speaking as you're going along. So those levels are there. So that creates a bank of activity for which, sort of a library to which you can actually see what's going on. And so some projects will be related to a lot of reading and research in an area. And so when you sort of walk into the planning meeting and they say, look, we want to look at gravity waves. I will get onto the skateboard a bit later on, but it's just happened that I've begun to talk about gravity waves. What had happened is that, what was it? In terms of understanding, I'm trying to relearn my special relativity. It's not my general relativity, and I've read a few thick books on gravity waves, and as a teacher, I've identified the fact that science has moved on from the way we teach it at school, and the actual way that science is actually practiced is far better expressed by someone looking deeply into how gravity waves were produced. Now, this poor, let alone there's this poor person waiting with their cases at the top, be freaked out by this complete madman speaking across. So, if you're not in the sort of the power regime of doing the right thing, getting brownie points by following a particular path, you're open to say, oh, well, how do people actually do science? And what does it mean? And what was the behavior process with it? So, like the easy science is done, when we do science, we have to pick through a whole lot of noise and difficult signals. Now, in terms of the gravity waves, in order to stop people making false claims, because the very first generation of gravity wave found heaps of results, but it was far harder to do it, they put in false waves, sort of an internal blind test. So a group that no one knew about would put in false signals and check if people could detect them, and if everyone followed the correct process, and it would pick if someone was leaking it or someone was insecure, they'd report it and they'd say, oh no, it's a false signal, put it in there deliberately to pick you up. So this is really sophisticated sort of scientists begin to apply scientific method to the sociology of science. It's a real big input. And there's this professor, Harry Collins, who's written these books, and he's a sociologist, and sitting on all the emails and speaking to everyone and looking at the sociology of gravity waves. Now, gravity waves are themselves very interesting. So is the discovery of the black hole. It says certain things, but and you can see, in terms of the path of understanding, there's some really fundamental things that we're doing incorrectly in New South Wales science teaching, which means that our kids cannot reach black holes, they cannot reach gravity waves, for these fundamental blocks. And the blocks are being put in by teachers who haven't been educated, and they're in moving, because we've got the culture, a very a very hierarchical culture. The teaching culture has a long time left academic independence. So as the teaching culture has moved away from academia, it's actually frozen in time. So coming back here, there is this thing in Stanford where they're doing something, I heard, on gravity waves and on black holes, getting the experts in to tell them about it, and ideally, from the teacher's perspective, is how to teach it, the activities that one would do to teach it. Now, unpacking this Harry Collins work, Professor Harry Collins at Cardiff in England, that's going to be relevant. Many chapters talked about numericals, the idea of numerical significance. That is, for that result, is it significant? Now, for me, intellectually, afterwards, you unpack the idea of what does significant mean. But something is numerically significant if the result is reliable. So you've got your reliability, and you've got this description of it, but the actual importance of reliability is that it's numerically significant. That is, that if the answer is 10, so the answer from your machine is 10, what is the numerical significance of it? Well, you measure it again and it's 50. Not much. It's, you know, that's the reliability of it. So you've got numbers, but what is the significance of those numbers? So there's this link between reliability and and the term numerical significance. So that number there, can it be reproduced? So your significance there. Then the next point is the evidential significance. So if I see a particular pattern in my gravity wave detector, is that significant? Now, what you have to do is a bit of reverse ingenuity, is actually cut down the space of all patterns and say which particular patterns are significant in advance. So, because you don't know what's coming in. And it's this multi-team thing and this method that you have now to actually go forward. Now, the corresponding point, there is an idea that scientists were doing this, and they're now doing something slightly different, and it maps, a one-to-one mapping. So numerical significance maps back to our reliability, and evidential significance maps back to validity. So you've got a sort of this basic process here, and let's see if we can extend it. So I've got what I want to teach and these primary steps. So the thing that I want to contribute is the following, the conversion of this into a holistic teachable thing which an entire class can engage in their own way, have a different entry level. So if you have a way of teaching something which has a precise entry level, you can you either lose a large amount of class or you lose an amount of time getting them to this entry level. So I have a proposal. So this is Harry Collins' insight, and I've just taken it a little bit further, and I'll just talk about the politics strategy of combined rehab and this sort of slightly weird culture that we're working on. So my initial idea is have something quite memorable. You start off with a perhaps a question and answer sequence that may be a little bit further out. You then have the idea of four P's: preamble, pattern, path, picture. Preamble is from the question-answer sequence at the very start. Preamble is that allows people to actually understand how that stimulus, or what you're doing it for, why. It's a sort of this funnel to connect whatever comes before to what you're going to do. It's sort of that linking bit. Now, pattern. Patterns are very important in gravity waves, but also a pattern itself, if you really unpack it, it is a ordering of nature which has got an intellectual impact. So that really, a pattern actually is sort of a hypothesis, but it's a little bit more flexible of it. It's a conjecture. And the word pattern is better. So we've got four P's. The path is how I'm going to find that pattern. And this is your method. And the picture is your results. So there's four P's lift very much into work at CERN, works into the work at gravity waves, but it works on a whole number of ways. And of course, your preamble pattern path picture can be taken sideways. You can start to say the pattern and then go to your preamble, or say the pattern and you can work at multiple levels at the same time. So your group working in this can go sort of sideways into it, whereas the way that we teach it actually does not quite make sense. You've got aim, possibly hypothesis, which is, you know, preamble, pattern, method. It's got the same correspondence, but it's a bit more flexible, and it's all got the four P's. So you can sort of cognitively pick one, forget the others, and try and work on it a little bit, and meet someone else who's remembered another section. Having the four P's allows sort of a group to come across. Then we have what we would call discussion. But for this, it's four P's, three S's, numerical significance of it. So is my result significant? Is it repeatable? Can other people get it? Is it using calibrated, reliably calibrated aspects to it? We can develop. Is it evidentially significant? And that is it valid? It is the fact that I have a Bunsen burner heating a bottle of water over here, and I've got a beaker over there, and I'm measuring the temperature of it. The temperature goes up. Is that evidence? Is that significance that it goes up? The significance that how I bounce it? Is it a valid way of doing it? And then the final S, which is not, is sort of in Harry's work, but sort of not as easily extracted. But you can see that the actual methodology is a reflective methodology to ensure this is the social significance. That is that when it's announced, you know, gravity waves is, I've got a certain social significance. Now, the social significance may be that I've learnt something from it, or this allows me to grow an understanding. So it's the social significance may be for society in general, for a small society or for a small group. It means that as a capacity, as a class, we've gone ahead. So you've got those significances. Then the next thing, and this is from exam writing and stuff like that, is multiple choice. That is, you now ask a question and have A, B, C, or D. So that someone can read something, then do the multiple choice and do it. Now, this is sort of like your literature review or the alternative explanations of what what's going on. So there's that literature review aspect, or is there alternative explanations? And it's also starting on the communication. And then once you've done that, you've got your multiple choice thing, and that allows you to do your answer again. So that gives you a very clear way of writing an answer, that it is very clear that what you're saying is an answer as distinct from other things, and your answer is the conclusion. It may be reflective answer. And then you have follow-on questions, which would go from this. Develop from this. And so you have other questions coming along. And that you could ask. So those questions then link into other 4 P's, S, 3 S's, multiple choice question, A, answer, and further questions. That answer question is your link to do further radiating out experiments. Now, the advantage of this is that you, as you write this out, it forms a little dragonfly. If you do the P's and the S's and the MQ, it looks like it, like a dragonfly if you write it. If you draw it the proper way. So it's got an advantage of being cognitively easier to do because it's the experiment's broken up in parts on the scientific method is broken up in parts on the floor, and you can pick one up and construct it together. You can get different people working on different aspects, and if you do an experiment, at a certain point people know ahead of to do the 3 S's, you might you ought to get those 3 S's lining up to get maximum hit of significance. You can actually do a very reliable experiment, say, of lighting a match over and over again. And prove it. You can light it up, and it's got those first S's, but the second S, sorry, the third S, is, you know, basically you'll get your ear grabbed and say you've done it. Now, the question is, with this, we've got gravity waves, we've got the link to education, and how do we actually get Professor Harry Collins on? And knowing, sort of like startup, so from my MBA days, people will risk and invest in potential value. So we have to go from a state, a risk-averse structured thing where whatever you say is put down, and I think Lynette will know what I'm talking about, to creating potential value and to explore potential value. And so what I've done is I've said, oh, look, we potentially have the money for you to come over. And Harry's written back saying, oh, well, I'm so old I can only go business class. Look up on Webjet and say, if this is the amount you're talking about, you know, that's a possibility. And given the obstacles, can we look at Harry coming to this concert? Sorry, this conference via video link. If we can't get him over here, obviously the second thing. And if that's so, can he actually access the actual leading minds in gravity waves to present for with a focus on making it relevant to teachers? He's come back with other information that he's the leading expert in artificial intelligence, has written some accessible books on artificial intelligence, and there are Australian companies in Sydney and Melbourne who would like him to come, have asked him to come. And so we're now building something up, and the entire process is, I suppose, unfortunately, to create it, but then go beneath the stick your head down and let other people probe and take the next step. And there are probes and steps to take the next step to see if we can link this up. So we've got some companies, we have some pools of money available to ministers, we've got a period of time which we can execute it in, we have a value proposition that Harry can bring in these other gravitational wave experts. We can actually convert gravitational wave into pure teaching material or attempt to set it up. We can actually set up collaborations with the UK where they take the seeds of Harry's ideas cultivated in this sort of Australian thing. It may or may not work, but UK has a far better educational research attitude. Let's find out. We might find a better way of doing this. Then you add it. So we can actually build the value proposition, which is the main point to get to. Most people, I think, in teaching, go straight to the economics of it, and have I done it before, and will I get... the sort of major thing that a lot of people in teaching involved is people who don't have value, sort of want to actually extract value. And the way that they do it is they sort of close things down. So we're ready to rock and roll on this, and it is true that I can get up here and there's going to be obvious gaps, but we now have obvious gaps from something which can be potentially going. So basically I think we'll need about $7,000 to fly them out business class to Australia and back again. Okay, I don't know whether we can get that $7,000, but that's where we can go. But the value is producing the value proposition. Now, I'm just going to talk a bit where I've sort of learnt the hard way of my sort of role is to come in, open up the strategic thing, and step back. When I've tried to go the next step, people have just cynically said, well, I can cut this down. I'm not going to get any benefit. I can cut this down. So, indeed, I had Dick Smith agreeing, suggesting, innovating to fly his helicopter to the school to help launch a student journal and speak to people. That's what he wanted to do. And this was immediately... The head science teacher said, no, this will not go. And the principal, no, we won't do it. So we had educational people saying, we don't want Dick Smith at this particular school. And I wasn't going to push it because it's enough to step. There was no way to go forward because they were sort of knocking the foundations from you. You realise that you can't go that, but there'll be another time, and I will learn this lesson. Well, what I've learnt from this lesson is to sort of integrate it into rehab, sort of not overextend myself too much, to gather people in, to focus, to build the value, but to keep beneath the radar so it's not particularly my idea driving forward. However, the actual research and reading I've done will be a key component of it, but we can make that a component which can come out at the very end. And and that's really what it matters. This matters not whether you take credit for something at the start, it's that credit, for where credit is due, when it is valuable, not ahead of time. So you check that it's going ahead. So that's you'll see on that, and you'll see how it's done. And this is sort of, I'm very much trained on how to do this. So this is startups getting ideas done, and basically going through innovation. So this is, there's a long track record of this being successful within certain factors, and not successful, which should be, with other factors coming in. So you can slowly build a picture. So one of the key things is the establishment of FIRST Robotics. And this is a robotics competition. And I was the key inaugural teacher, which said, yes, it can be done. Let's do it. And the education department threw some 200 pages of documentation at me, which I just went through one page at a time and just burnt all the way through. So what obstacles pushed it ahead? That could be done, But when it came to doing robotics again in a new school in a different environment, you'd be undercut and put off to the side. You couldn't do anything, and you'd say, "Well, let's try and learn from it. Where is this going to lead?" So there's that gravity wave stuff, and I think the aim we've got to do is that the gravity wave seminar has to give something that a teacher can explain a gravity wave to a kid at Bartley One, to be a template for how one might, not necessarily, we're not going to attack the reliability and validity, rote learning, rigor, it's sort of like catechism, religion, we're not going to attack it, but here's the way it's happening in the future, if you happen to be interested in it, and it might work for some students in some situations as an alternative if they're finding it too hard. And of course I think it will eventually die a death here. I'm sort of going to the darkness here, there's no moon up, and I'm sort of going down Glenbrook Gorge at this particular point in time. So I hope I can get here. And you can hear from this quietness. Normally, if there is someone in the bush, you can hear them at this stage or in this sort of darkness. So I'm pretty sure I've got Glenbrook Gorge to myself at the moment. So there's this overall thing of, where we want to do, what at the end of the stage, what do we want to do out of gravity waves? And perhaps that's a pro forma, a question that we can do and get out from. It's sort of like lesson construction. Where do we want the teachers to go? What can we learn? What's the feedback mechanism? What's the structure associated with it? But the bottom line at this stage is just pile in as much possibility as possible to get your gravity wave experts from around the world, talking to these teachers for half an hour, whatever it is, and getting across. And I suppose one of the things that I've really learned, because I'm a scientist, scientists would say, well, I have not been able to communicate with any bloody teachers. Thank goodness I can speak to you. They'll come in and I'll be able to stand behind them. And it's sort of like sign language, convert everything they say into simple language and then get them to correct the students' books. And they're celebrities. But there is this huge communication gap. Okay, so there's that. I don't know how much I can cover. Something on the Einstein pendulum where I want to actually take that. But first I want to talk to Lynette. And we have this target person. They've put an abstract up. They want to talk about mobile phones. Of course, now the mobile phone as a substitute physics device, replacement device, is one concept, but the mobile phone empowering, being a conceptual thing of own, it's got ownership and expertise with it, and putting it together. And what's happened is that I've looked at the how we can modernise the teaching lab with the Internet of Things, new circuits out there, and the replacement bits have arrived, so I should start that up. It is difficult because I've got my workbench outside. I'm not allowed inside the house, outside the house. I have to clean it up. I was going to put it in a box. You can't put it in a box. You can't put it in the shed. You can't do anything with it. It's just sort of, madness. What am I going to do? But that being said, looking at a particular device, how far can I extend it? What's going on? Oh, I have to actually start breaking this up into the different things, and I broke up the Internet of Things speaker into a dynamics trolley, and I went along the path of how can I build a Dynamics trolley for no money whatsoever. And I had a dog walking lead to act as a spring, and a skateboard and a mobile phone attached to the skateboard, so it would monitor acceleration, position, etc., etc. Coming across and allowed to happen, sort of a very controlled input. And for another project, to get samples from the United States, they wanted a web page, and so I began to create this web page, and then remember how to do things, experiment things sort of at a fairly high level to work out what sort of web editor I could use and, you know, what was the best way to go ahead. And part of it, I produced a web page and began producing 3D web pages. So this is pages which look sort of, so they're floating inside your mobile phone due to 3D effects. I'm still struggling to make that look, not look completely, you know, appalling. That, and then I showed someone and they saw the skateboard and they said, I know the king of the skate park. And the immediate thing is that a kid that sees a skateboard does not think a Dynamics trolley, as I thought. They think of getting on top of it. And of course, getting on top of it, standing on top of a Dynamics trolley is the absolute thing to do, especially if you could get the mobile phone to do augmented reality of the acceleration in front of the glasses. If you could add that together, it's really sort of cool. And and then there was another aspect, and so I did a little bit of work to just basically email a screenshot of what I was doing to the kid, and I went through the mum who is in the oh my god, you're just, you know, not doing the right thing, shut down, and allowed me to, and this is try and fail. Oh, what's the parameter here is that the kid is not in a space able to. So we've got this. Sorry, let's put it together. We've got this target here. He's got this idea of presenting mobile phones. If we can then say augment it with a bit of industry backing, sports industry backing, and stuff, we can grow it. So he's got it. We're not threatening. We're not saying you shouldn't be doing it. Have you considered this aspect of it? And selecting a key personnel, which was Lynette, who knows this particular person, has worked with this person today, and Lynette has got the people skills to work with students. You know, she's got a fantastic stuff. You know, there's a little bit of story to where Lynette is and why she is there, which, if you add it to my particular story of, you know, why am I outside the teaching system, you'll start to build a bigger picture of what's going on. But the entire idea is gain and maintain the initiative and just totally overwhelm this. So Lynette, I've sort of briefed today, and she's on top of it, and this will go to her. And then what we need to do is feed high-storied process. So I have two people, a king of the skateboard park, and they have overcome their hatred of science and the derision from their peers to pick up a mobile phone and put it on a skateboard, and they've had so many years of science, Australian science teaching, which has been run by this, you know, in this particular thing. You can't have anything but a negative outcome from it, which I found, simply because what we have said, oh, look, we're successful with this group of people. And it's sort of like, you know, you have a ship with people dying on it, and you just push them off. And, hey, look, we've got everyone here, because there's bodies everywhere coming out. So looking at the problem in a particular way, we want to sample refugees who have come to Australia everything is there's an opportunity, and they want to communicate, they want to link in, they want to link in with other. Which is this is complete right thing. And also there's this network, besides the STAID network in Australia, where you speak to the business owner who owns the blah blah blah, who goes, it's all STAID. It's much more electric. We can actually identify sort of a lead refugee advocate, which I've mentioned I can't talk about, and we can actually go into them and actually say, look, we want a selection of candidates, maybe all of them, as class, the skateboard class. And of course Lynette's immediately began to radiate, I can take the journey so far, but I have to leave it alone. Again, for the same purpose, is that if I keep my innovation value high and low and focus and take it up to a certain point where other people can take it, that's going to be far more effective than if I'm diluted by following its directions. I want to get it going, but there's certain things, that certain skills I can do to link and build these networks. So, and then of course there's what this you could do a whole lot of other things, and there's this media story which you can come across. Now, again, this is hooking back to the MBA business training, in that your net present value, is it NPV, your net present value is by your future projected earnings, based on your understanding of taking advantage of an opportunity. There's an entire method of thinking which can easily be done, but it means that the executive has a value. Like, I have a value of actually producing that net present value, and I have to maximize that value without exposing myself to people ripping things out. And at the same time, I've got to improve in the cognitive things, sort of like finding things up. Like, a microphone I couldn't find for hours. I can't remember the house, it was in my pocket. I didn't know. So there's that brief there. We've got the July 21st tick over time, and we've got to really nail it by then, or have something it up to a certain point there. So I do have a sporting company which come in and support it. So I think doing it, but again, I have other people who can actually build it. Once we've got it going, we can build it, and I can step back and keep underneath the cover, and then when it has value, I'm sure Lynette and other people will point to it. And it's one of the major things is that if you're under threat, you can't claim value. You've just got to build it, pass it on to your network, work to go up on it. Okay, well, on to the second half of this. I rested a really brief moment at the Glenbrook Creek crossing, and I have to go up, and Lynette will particularly understand, because she lives in the area, will particularly understand that I'll be quite out of breath as I go up here. Perhaps I won't be. You never know. Now, the critical thing, I was totally up. I would spend a quarter of an hour, 10 minutes at the top, just gasping for breath at the top of the hill before they fixed me up. So it's hard. It's one of those things that it's horrible to say. I am interested in other people being cured and cures in general, but I've been cured. Excellent. It's horrible to say that. I am interested in medical progress, but I've got my medical progress. I'm very happy. Thank you very much. I'm just going to focus on enjoying everything from now on. So what I want to talk about is, so my main gig in this one is A, not irritating people by speaking up too much, but I've got a gig as at the registration desk to cover it. So that's something which I can cope with. But one of the things I want to, you know, there's certain things that I feel like I really have to get in and explore. I suppose the first one I'll talk about is the something called the Einstein pendulum. So, imagine a uniform magnetic field. Okay, this is the starting point of most teachers. Imagine a uniform magnetic field. And I have a wire in that magnetic field. And that wire, rather than going perpendicular to the field, using the what I call the right-hand slap rule, the Lorentz force, the wire actually travels along the field lines. So initially one would say there's no forces on it. But if I arrange that, a uniform electric magnetic field and a wire which travels along the field lines, and I put the current, no current, I suddenly put a current on it, and then reverse the current the opposite way, and forward and back, and have that wire. So that wire, the wire is not carrying any current. In fact, I'll make the wire graphite, not graphite, ferrite. I'll make it basically transformer core material, i.e. no eddy currents, like no currents. This is actually a ceramic. And I put the magnetic field back and forth, and I suspend that piece of ceramic as a torsion balance. And there's a bit to say where the advances are. And I look at that, and I place a laser beam on it, so I can measure that. There's ever so slight a little ticking or rocking of this magnetic core. And the aim is to have that sitting on the bench, ticking away, and establish a HSC marking competition for it. Now, before we go too far, let's talk about actually what in actual fact is happening. When I put a magnetic field through a core, the electrons align with the core, and as they align, their spin aligns, and so does their angular momentum transfer from the electrons to the rod. The rod moves a little bit, and then when that's established, and the rod is at its furthest point of rotation in a spring balance, I reverse the field, and it spins the other way, and it rocks. This rocking effect used to be incredibly hard to see. And with a few little technical innovations, it's now doable. It's sort of a breakthrough of, you know, the very first quantum crack in teaching. But obviously, you wouldn't, people have got, if you propose to teach it in the classroom, you will have people objecting. So we have to, the policy is to actually avoid it. So how have I actually produced a pendulum with very high Q, low losses, able to show this at a dollar? And it doesn't have any of the complex coupling of a weight which you hang and rotate And the way I've done it is I've simply made it a double torsion pendulum suspended from the left and the right, is lying flat, and it means that as it bends, it pulls the wire in. As it rotates, it pulls the wire in a little bit from both directions, so it actually doesn't move. The forces are balanced. And it's still a way to perfect it. But I'm using a whole heap of very cheap materials, innovative materials, things from fishing tackle, wire, brass wire. Everything's non-magnetic, except the actual magnets, and the magnets are from a levitation toy, which I wouldn't mind building just to get it through my head how to do it. So the idea is that you have this thing, you don't explain to the teachers ahead what it is. It's not something they have to do. It's an optional thing if they want to do it. So you have your delegation, and you have in everyone's bag the exam question. They can do if they want, and if there are several prizes, which one is probably the magnetic levitation tool, which I want to build anyway. You know, put it across. Another is, and it would be the built one and the second one, get them fairly cheap from China. Possibly isotropic carbon levitation, magnetic levitation. It's a bit like the superconductor, but it's actually diamagnetic. And that, again, I'd possibly be prepared to buy it, because then I would get it in from China, show it to my surgeons to try and explain the actual material that they're using. They don't quite understand that they are using graphite inside some. And put it, so there's a few prizes there, and everyone goes across it, and what happens is that there's a web app feed which as you go throughout the day gives clues as to what's going on, a little bit more information. Okay, so it's got this web thing, and you get the responses from the teachers, and it's a HSC marking thing. I should say that in the wisdom of, even though I was the top HSC marker, the sort of the school bulliness, I can't HSC mark anymore. So this sort of gets around this, gets me practicing HSC marking. And we mark the question, and of course there's a whole heap of things they could describe in it. The laser, you give marks away for basically anything, the way that you do it in the HSC, but full marks if you can actually nail the Einstein to Hass effect, which is outside the course. So it's a bit unfair. And you have these prizes that you can win. You could possibly win a Ket set, and it's, this is all the marketing thing that every quarter of an hour throughout the day you have a piece of information or a clue or a support come across. So you can wait to the very last moment to put in your report, or you can not at all, you can put it afterwards. But of course there's got to be some sort of waiting system. Someone who gets a answer in early will get a higher mark. All this complexity with it, and the focus is the competition and the link. And of course what I get out of it is the Einstein to Hass pendulum. Perhaps there's certain aspects which are publishable, but what is more publishable is the teacher's responses to it. You know, to see of so many delegates, what percentage decided to reply, what strategy did they use, how effective was it, and after it's known, explain it fully in the Stands Wire magazine if they wanted to, and then get a second type of thing, like actually teach the teachers of it, and then go to another jurisdiction with the same thing and do that year after year. But this is the prototype of going forward. So what it will require is the HSC question for the De Haas pendulum given to anyone with the description of the prizes and the method. And then now I've got to work out how you do the web page, which updates every once in a while, and then you have to put in the form, and it's time stamped and dated by the, it's like an election biz, and perhaps look, you might get a few people, and it's worth with a price. What you might do is, I don't know, it's how to work it going out. So you can imagine egotism, strategy, nothing to lose, fun, you know, a whole lot of aspects of it. That is the answer under HASP, is I could not present a piece of quantum physics which is beyond the HSC syllabus at the Stands Wire conference. I could, but A, I wouldn't want to because it's too much stress, and people are hardwired to be negative and critical, and those people who are negative and critical can just not hand in their HSC question and just not win the prize, and we can surmise the 50% or 30% of people who just don't, or 90% of people, what fraction of those people are, what do those people think, and does it matter? Isn't that incredible? They've gone from a position of their negative mattering to the negative aspect, not mattering. That's one aspect to look at. And I'm out there with the gorge now. Before, when I was struggling, I would have to sit down for 10 minutes on a bench and just struggle through that. But I've just walked out of the gorge pretty well. Not much, much problem there. I've got to get home. Now, one of the look, there's a constant tension from if you are a professional scientist and you're what's deemed to be taught for the purposes of grading people. So, at the end of the day, so this is the next topic, is the English on tour. And if quantum mechanics is hard to explain and write, classical mechanics is easier to explain, but it's basically folk knowledge. That is, knowledge of the people, kept in force by the people. So, quantum stuff, you can say whatever you want, no one cares. Folk knowledge, if you suggest that it's wrong, people really care because that's how the folk knowledge is maintained. This is by people. So, and of course, folk knowledge, one of the things is it's legitimized. It's people legitimized knowledge. Therefore, you can examine it. You can teach it. You can examine it. It's got absolutely no value to anyone down the track. So, a sizable chunk of what we teach has got no value whatsoever. So this is so is true when you come to as sort of teachers insist on folk knowledge from their, also as parents and teachers insist on folk knowledge from the students, they also insist on folk knowledge from the institutions. And what happens is that if an institution answer was to give you some quantum physics and what was actually happening, people would say, no, tell me what I've always wanted to know, in the same way. And so what happens is that you have staff, the knowledge, you pick the knowledge, then the knowledge picks the staff, and then the staff can only teach that knowledge, so it gets locked down. I really have to say this. So let's talk about synchrotron radiation. So the device of a synchrotron is that in a constant magnetic field, a charged particle fired in that magnetic field will take the same amount of time to commit to do an orbit. So if it is going faster, it will have a greater centripetal force, which will pull it further out, which will mean it will go longer. So as the velocity increases, the distance increases, so it takes the same time each time to do an orbit of the magnetic field. Therefore, you have a big circular magnet, which is broken across, and you have electrodes on it, which in the time that the particle is going in that gap, I hope I don't get run over by this bloody car, that'd be a bit of a tragedy, wouldn't it, to get this far. So this, I'm just walked over the railway bridge. Oh God. Putting my hand over my face. Oh, it's moving away. It's interesting that the police, oh, yes, Lynette, the police, well, it's hard to say. Since I'm better, the police don't check on me. So when I was first just stumbling around at the dark, trying to just get on top, I'd always have the police would, I didn't realise that were actually checking on me. It's rather funny. Okay, so I'm sure there was probably something else happening. You probably know more about the police there. So the synchrotron has this thing that it knows just exactly when to push. It's like you're pushing your kid in the swing. You know to push at a particular time. They're the same swing. You just keep on pushing them. Go higher and higher. So you can get a proton, which is charged. So it bends, the proton moves. So this is hydrogen, it moves. And you can slam it into, I believe it's oxygen 18. Now, this is you start to really get into your quantum physics. What's going on? The oxygen 18 goes in and it hits the proton hits the nucleus, and out the other side pops a neutron. So oxygen 18 has, eight protons and 10 neutrons. You fire in a proton, and a neutron shoots out, and you make fluorine 18. It may be 19, I think it's 18. And fluorine 18 is unstable and will emit a positron, So you mix the fluorine with sugar, feed the patient a candy, the patient eats it, and they light up as a lighthouse. You get an annihilation matter, annihilations there. Okay, so I can contact, I think it's Rod Dowler, and set this up. However, one of the things I sort of irks me, and I can do it, irks me is that the drawing of the nucleus and the physics of that last, that bit where the cyclotron hits the oxygen 18, produces a fluorine, is based on 1936 misconception of what the nucleus could be like. Sort of like, and this is the nucleus as a big ball of red and blue nucleons, protons and neutrons, as a big ball. And the major thing is that if you were to hit a clump with a proton, you wouldn't, it would most largely, I suppose it wouldn't produce a clean momentum transfer with a neutron coming out the other end. It's just, you know, the likelihood of it's happening, it wouldn't be lossy. There's many reasons that it doesn't operate. And this is the liquid drop model. And this is the liquid drop model that the fiction that they're not wave functions, protons and neutrons aren't wave functions, they're little balls, little physical balls. There you go, 1936. It was put up for a couple of months and then taken down. However, the people flicking through the journals said, I can teach that. Regardless of whether it's wrong, I can teach that. And then that's how I was taught. I only want to be taught by someone who teaches me that way. So like the student controlling the teacher. And so you've got that massive thing. And so you can imagine the riot that you would have if you said to a teacher's conference, oh, look, the fundamental aspects of your atom are all incorrect. Of course you wouldn't do that. But what you could do is say, just to wise you up, just before you go in, we don't want to offend anybody. There's a lot of tension associated with it. But this is what we know the nucleus to be like. These wave functions, the actual protons sit on top of each other. So your first, say in helium, your first proton sits at its center at three zeros, x, y, z, three zeros. Second proton is the opposite spin, and so therefore it sits in space through the first one. So the first two, and so for the neutrons, in your helium, all nucleons sit on top of each other. An alpha particle behaves like a single particle. Sort of there's no other aspect to it. Now, in fact, the quantum physics of the nucleus is very much repeats the quantum physics of the electrons. In fact, the electron sits through the nucleus. So if you look at the very zero, the origin, that's got, say, in a helium, it's got two electrons in that, a tiny fraction of two electrons, a tiny fraction of two protons, a tiny fraction of two neutrons, all in the same point. If you could take a spoonful of that matter out and taste it, it would taste of all three things. People, if you wanted to say, people have this ice cream scoop viewpoint that I can go in and I can taste it. And quantum mechanics says the electrons are much bigger and all this type of stuff. Now, because of this, an even number of protons is far more stable than an odd number. In fact, if you look at the periodic table, the abundance, the even P, even Z, is much more abundant than the odd Z. And so what you've done is, besides oxygen 8, you've got fluorine 9, so that's like that's really unstable because it's an odd number of protons more than anything else. Because really, you'd say, oh, how's that that working? And I sort of think, I've got to really, really think. So you've got fluorine. Actually, I just sort of remember. Where the fluorine, for some reason in my head, I've got fluorine 19 in my head, which would be bizarre. And so I'll have to go back and look at it. I'm not there yet, but the proposal is that the tour goes ahead, but you have just a quiet side talk. If I can give them a quiet side talk saying, you know, we're not there yet. We don't want to offend anybody. This is what you probably teach anyway. And look, it's just wrong. Okay, and if you don't like it, all you have to do is say, look, there was this person at this conference who said this is wrong, and this is how it is. And now, I must admit, so people teach the Ikawa potential. So for no physical reason whatsoever, the nucleus is slightly repulsive at the very centre. Now, rather than infinitely attractive. It's A, it's not necessary. B, it's been superseded by the Saxon Biggs potential. Is that Saxon? I can't remember what it is. It's an empirical one where you look at the energy levels of it. And this sort of really allows the whole structure of nuclear physics to unfold. And it's via quantum physics. Now, what happens is that people go to ANSTO and we do both types of music, country and western. And these people, because they're really not, the educators hand-picked to, on cue, say certain things, doesn't necessarily mean that they have the ability to go to do quantum. And this is my, my worry. I think I can do it. It's just what I'll be happiest doing is this. And if at the end of that stage they say, you know, an external person looking in saying, you can do it, but it will seriously not succeed, okay, we can then say, well, why don't we cut our losses? We will take a sample of 5 people, explain them out of that tour, and see, then get a discussion group between the 5 people who have, 5 people who haven't been explained, and just get an understanding of how we introduce quantum physics into it. Now, hard to say. Quantum physics is really hard to teach on top of really poorly taught science all the way through. People can convince themselves that I have achieved a short-term memory hit of a certain fraction of students who are quote-unquote good at science. They're not necessarily the most critical students, because if they were, they would have you for have you for breakfast. So I don't know, whatever it is. So I want to do the synchrotron tour. So the synchrotron tour is you make radioactive fluorine by knocking out a neutron with a proton. The proton sits there, conservation of momentum. It's just that the actual... It's not that the picture is illustrative. It is illustrative, but it's illegitimate because we now know better. It's one way of saying what's going on, but we now know better. And of the 10 people that see it, you have people say, oh, well, when I'm marking a student's paper, if they drew the correct, quantum mechanically correct thing, I would be in my rights to mark them wrong. And it does happen. Students randomly come up with quantum mechanics from time to time. I mark them wrong because I'm in the side of it. I can't unplug this value system. So I'll eventually get on it. So if you look at all the themes, this is the gravity wave, the surfboard, the Einstein de Haas, the cyclotron. At all points, the aim is a little bit of thinking ahead of time, but structuring it such that we extend things a little bit further, but remove the risk. So with the Harry Collins thing, extend it as far as we can with risk, but accept that we've got to get certain people over the line. We've got work to do to build the value of them coming over, to a value statement of what's happening. Now, the very interesting thing is that you could argue, I don't know, I think there is an argument for a special case in the Harry Collins for the skateboard. Again, it's to do a little bit of planning such that when it switches on, we have the right people with the right communications in the right scenario with the right audience and right story. Everything can go at once. It's sort of like this, your basic planning. And the problem of planning is just going up to Lynette saying, how about coming on board? It's your baby, you can add to it. And Lynette's already come up with a few pearler ideas. To come across, and you realise that the value that you do add is, for me, really early on, and it will be very, hopefully it will be valuable, maybe, maybe not, but you can trust the people further down the track, and if people further down the track want to play grabbing all the value, let them do it. Because it's not going to go ahead. If their operational mode is, I've got to get all value for it, let them go ahead, because it may bifurcate other valuable things. Then the Einstein to Haas pendulum, there is this way of basic marketing. That is, you have to, markets, it's the innovation which has greatest value if it is adopted and if it's taken on, and you've got to then not present it to blockers, you've got to present it sideways, that it's away, it's off and running, it's happening by the time you're going. And so this idea of happening, that I could actually get a I wonder if you could get a notification on people's phones. It's got this, is the idea of the addictive quality for it. And so you, this is the entire thing of competition, sales, all that type, and then the idea of doing the synchrotron correctly with quantum physics, but having people self-select, basically, that those people, hopefully they've had a positive experience with quantum physics with their Einstein at Haas. Go ahead. Now, again, it's this overall... oh, you hear the... Now, that was not a coal train. That was just half a dozen diesels just powering along. Nothing on it. But it's a bloody... Oh, no, it is a coal train. Wow. She is. It's a, these are kilometre-long coal trains. Now, it is interesting that the electricity consumption of Australia has collapsed. There is no more energy-hungry industries, efficient light bulbs, a whole lot. People, I don't know, electricity price has gone up, supply and demand, all that type of... palaver going on. So the overall idea is to actually, you know, limit exposure, you know, focus on recovery and see how it all pans out. So we'll get done. Now what I'll do here is I've got a little bit up at Cowdery Street. Again, Lynette will know all about that. So what I'm going to do, so Lynette, what I've done is begun to, it's awful, it's like your brain's like a sieve, to learn the periodic table. Then I've learned molecules. Yeah, she was the only real molecule I can tell you about is perhaps Dettol and TNT. They're all gone. I can possibly mustard grass and carotene. There's a few molecules, but it's taken months and months to learn the periodic table and learn different structures, different ways. It's sort of like this. It's 118 elements, and 118, and it's just been this absolute labour. Sort of memorizing all the ones which are got a certain type of name, all the ones of a certain type of letter, all the ones which are got a colourful flame, the ones that stink, the ones which, you know, it's just trying to get through and stuff like that. And then, you know, being confronted by mistakes in the periodic table. Not the periodic table has got mistakes, but people who roll them out, mistake creeps into it. Just year after year they produce the same periodic table with mistakes. You can imagine me at the excruciating concert I went to where people did the periodic table. It was just teeth pulling. You go, oh, that's in the wrong place. Oh, you know, just, oh. Just, and you couldn't say everyone was, oh, wow. Gosh, and look, there's 118 elements. Well, let's go through them. So I had to keep on going through them, and eventually, I don't think about it, it comes out. So hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, neon, sodium, magnesium, aluminium, silicon, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, argon, potassium, and calcium. Look, I'll start that one again, because I think I said potassium and calcium. So, you know, I did do sodium and magnesium. Scandium, titanium, vanadium, chromium, manganese, iron, cobalt, nickel, copper, zinc, gallium, germanium, arsenic, selenium, bromine, krypton, rubidium, strontium, yttrium, zirconium, niobium, molybdenum, technetium, ruthenium, rhodium, palladium, silver, cadmium, indium, tin, antimony, tellurium, iodine, xenon, cesium, barium, lanthanum, cerium, praseodymium, neodymium, promethium, samarium, europium, goldium, terbium, dysprosium, holmium, erbium, thorium, thallium, thulmium, then lutetium, hafnium, tantalum, tungsten, rhenium, osmium, iridium, platinum, gold, mercury, thallium, lead, bismuth, polonium, astatine, radon, francium, radium, actinium, thorium, protactinium, uranium, neptunium, plutonium, americium, curium, Berkeley, californium, fermium, einsteinium, I don't know whether that's right, I'll have to really think about that, mendelevium, nobelium, lawrencium, rutherfordium, dubnium, seaborgium, borium, hastium, metrium, danstratium, rotgenium, copernican, I just can't, it's flervium, nipponium, moscovium, livermorium, tennesseum, and organosson. There you go. We'll look through it and you keep on going back. And ideally, I should be able to say them. What the fire? Oh, so someone's fired a flare. What the heck is going up? This really reminds me of my military days. The heck, why? Why they fired a flare? Gee whiz, I hope it doesn't catch a fire. Sorry. That was one of the things. So it just really reminded me of army days. So, why fire a flare at this time of night? That's one of the things. And blow me down, the number of books. I was reading about my book of the elements, and it's taken months to learn. And this is one of the things is that you put in huge amounts of effort. You finally get up there and say, "Oh, you're all right." You go, "Oh, I can't do anything else besides it." It took me hours and weeks to get there. And so it's really amazing that when you really study it, you see the periodic table is absolutely brimful of history and quantum physics and contradictions. I think terbium and erbium, they mix up the bottles, and terbium became erbium, erbium became terbium. And then that ytterbium, oh bloody hell, as I say, I knew I was missing one. It's yttrium. I finished off with holmium. I've left out yttrium between rhenium. You can sort of, hopefully that's getting across. I won't bore you across it, but there's this one element which has been named after this Swedish city called yttrium, ytterbium, erbium and terbium, all attempts to name this one city, okay? And you go, wow, what a city, what does that city mean? And ytter means outer, and bium means like erbium, urban. It means city, outer village. And it was a lonely mountain in the middle of, you know, Sweden's multiple islands, a lonely mine, and they had a coffee shop in it, basically. And it was called the Outer Village. And so a lot of these things you go into, and there's four elements. And so that's, yeah, something like 3% or 4% of the, like 3% of the periodic table have been devoted to hitting something on the head. Yeah, where everyone else is scrambling for them. And then you've got cobalt and nickel are named after Satan. These are the evil nymphs which kill people. It's the nickel mines and the old nickel. And cobalt is the thing like that. And of course, if you want to talk about death, you can't go much against past antinomy, which is anti-monk, means it's the drug, it's the element which killed all the monks in the Middle Ages. Their antinomy inscribing they'd put in their tongues and all cark, absolutely death there. So I'll give it for Lynette to listen to this if she's interested. Thanks a lot for listening, and it took me an hour and 40 minutes to do that. So, good exercise, but yeah, a lot of effort. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.